Tim and Sid. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. This here is the Tim and Sid Show. You are now tuned in, coast to coast, entertaining the masses. Sports edutainment.
Yeah.
It's about to get started. Sit back, enjoy the show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Hello. I'm Sid Sixero. He is Tim McAuliffe. Directly from our basements to your hearts. This is Tim and Sid. Tuesday, June the 2nd. We are live on TV, radio, online, and available 24/7 via the podcast. We always appreciate you downloading the pod. It helps us out a little bit. It is another day, Timmy, of the conversation here on Tim and Sid. Donovan Bennett posted a column on sportsnet.ca last night. It has got people talking. That's the point of it. That is a good thing. Donovan will join us a little later on here on Tim and Sid.
Dave Zirin, speaking of starting conversations, one of the more thought-provoking sports writers out there, someone not afraid to have the uncomfortable conversation. He'll join us in hour two. Tiger Woods also put out a statement today. It didn't go over well in some circles. Michael Collins, ESPN, former PGA Tour caddy and now a very popular golf analyst on
it's
the
huge,
four letter, south of the border, will join us. And full disclosure, Sid and I, longtime listeners, first-time callers with Michael, we were going to talk to him before the match, and we'll have to explain this to him, but now our first-time call comes not only in the middle of a global pandemic, but racial issues that this generation has probably never seen before, at least this generation. Plus, we can't possibly do a show without talking about how baseball's wasting time. Now, can we? Sidney?
No, we can't
get
we can't.
Through a show.
It is the great tradition of our time, Tim. The great tradition
physically,
of our time.
Physically impossible for us to get through. In fact, I talked to a group of U15 baseball players, and they asked me what my least favorite story to cover was. And I said labor unrest, specifically that of Major League Baseball, where there is, one, a history of it, and two, complete and utter distrust, which leads to bold-faced lying. And so we'll walk down that road with John Paul Morosi. MLB Network, Fox Sports will join us.
Are you telling me, and the listener and the viewer, Tim McAuliffe, that you do not like discussing force majeure? That you do not like discussing, I believe I had a force majeure this morning. I don't want to talk about it. You do not like talking about prorated salaries. You don't like how dare you don't like deferred salaries. You don't like none of that. Come on, McAuliffe. Get with the program. Get with the program. McAuliffe has left the screen to puke.
Sorry, Sid said something. It made me ill my stomach.
I didn't even know he had a sink in his basement. Is there a sink in your vicinity? You're all right? Tim McAuliffe grabbing his stomach, bonjour, because I have made him puke. Tim McAuliffe stepping back to the microphone. And Tim McAuliffe lost about 15. You've lost weight, man. Not as much as me. I look better. But you have lost some serious weight, Tim McAuliffe. Honestly.
I'm getting jacked, son. My wife yelled down and said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "Sid just said something that made me puke in my mouth a little bit." And I had to...
What did she think was the matter? What did like,
can I get
off
some water? Is there any way I can get water? Like, Cam, can you?
Tim tells me all the time he loves his labor talk. This is all an act. All right? 15-year-old baseball players. This is all an act. So don't buy it. Don't buy it.
John Paul Morosi will join us later on in the show. And by the way, if your force majeure lasts more than 44 hours, please call a doctor. Okay?
Yes, please call them. But mine are quick. Tim, I want to get back to the issue at hand here. I try and fail to segue off what I just said to you into anything remotely serious.
We don't have to if you don't want to.
No, but I'd like to because we've been, from Friday's show to this moment, it's not going to change. We're going to keep having some actual societal conversations
dialogue.
Here on Tim and Sid.
Dialogue.
Some actual
conversation.
And other shows might be scared of it. None on this radio station are scared of it, but others might be scared of it. We're going to continue to do that. I haven't asked you in a while on this show, how are you? Because I know most of the times the answer you throw back at me is I'm a lot better than most people. And it's true. I'm in the same boat. I understand what is really going on out there, and it is rough. And don't think that 40 million unemployed people also are not lending to a little bit of what you are seeing in the United States of America. This is rough. Yeah. This is rough on everybody.
And COVID numbers that didn't just go away with the latest piece of information and unrest to hit the United States of America. In fact, I was just looking at COVID numbers over the last little while as Sid and I were talking before the show, and there are places, some of those places that were bragging about where they were earlier, that are, they're not flattening the curve. The curve, it's building in some of those places that were bragging earlier. I'm going to be honest, I'm still overwhelmed. And I think that there's a lot of people that are overwhelmed. And I want to say this, because I've said it before, and I said it was good for me. And I think that I've said this enough over my 20 years in broadcasting in Canada, that one, I want to be an ally, that two, I will listen when the time comes, and that three, I will evolve and attempt to keep learning as we go along in order that I can be better at my job and be a better public figure, because I understand the platform that Sid and I sit on, no matter whether we're in a multi-million dollar studio on the Rogers campus or in our basements, help pay for by the platform that we're on.
Sorry, that said, we usually work in a multi-million dollar studio. Is that you were talking about our studio or other studios?
Yeah, no, they're expensive.
Okay. That was a ridiculous. That was a ridiculous thing to chime in on. Go ahead. You perked my ears up.
I got it. A multi-$100,000 studio.
There you go. That's still good. Please continue.
I think the equipment gets you into the millions, but whatever.
It might. We got to look at the receipts.
I said during the COVID-19 thing that, and for those who weren't around for that, I understand it. I'm not trying to assume that you watch the show all the time. But I told Sid that I was overwhelmed to start it. We had a bunch of things go on in our family that we had to deal with. And then, you know, that whole global pandemic thing hit. And I had to unplug. I had to take myself out of whatever it was that was building on TV and radio and all of the bad news. And there's a part of me, and I know you told me this over the weekend, that you watched basically 48 hours of news over the weekend. And there's part of me, and I know that the uncomfortable conversation is the one that we need right now. But there's something perverse about watching the news like sport right now, like many people are doing. There's something gross in that. And I think that understanding what's going on, keeping yourself up to date, having conversations like we've had, and I'm proud to say like we've had over the last few shows that we've had, like that uncomfort is necessary. It's okay. It leads to conversations. Some conversations are great. Some conversations aren't so great. But it's also not. It's also okay to not want to partake in watching all this like sport. If the news presented just as much of the good news as the rioting and the looting and the stuff that everyone watches like sport, not everyone, sorry, that many.
Let's be clear on that.
That many watch like sport is different. And I feel like a lot of my heaviness comes from that. Because I'll have the conversation. Sid, listen, I'm not trying to pat ourselves on the back, but you and I have had these conversations every step along the way. Have there been times where we've chose to sit out because people are tired of it or there was some sort of fatigue? Sure, we understand our role as a distraction, and I'm not trying to give a speech here. That's the last thing I'm doing. But if you're asking me how I'm doing, it's tough, and it's tough to watch all of that. And I just wish that we could see the good with the bad, because then, you know, that idea of watching for sport wouldn't be a part of the equation for me, and that sometimes sickens me. even though I know that we have to be uncomfortable.
We do. And just to clarify again on my end, and I know Tim isn't suggesting it, but I am not one of those who are watching it for sport. Tim is right. There are.
No.
This is.
And you're just a news head. I should say that, too.
I'm a news. That's fine. It's fine. Yeah. But
you've always been that way since I knew you. And since
but I do feel, but let me explain. I just want to explain why I was watching for 48 straight hours, if I may.
But I wasn't suggesting that you were, and I hope you.
No. But you bring up a really interesting point.
It's not
that
like
I hadn't
we planned
this
conversation.
It's that some people are just watching to see which window gets smashed in next, or
who
what
does
political
it?
Figure. Look, do you turn away from stuff like that? I'm a human being like you and everyone else, and these networks aren't stupid. They know to a certain extent, but I'm also watching a lot of peaceful people walk through New York and Chicago. And so part of me thinks it's just not the other aspect of this that's being glorified. I'd like to hope that's not the case because I am seeing both sides. I watched 48 straight hours of it because I've been terrified of this moment with our neighbors for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying a race war is about to break out, but this is how race wars break out. And they have arrested that guy and nothing's calmed down. That's why I was watching. It wasn't calming down. And there are people in positions of real power who have gotten to their seat with conflict who are fine with this. And that's why I was watching. I'm scared. I'm scared because
I think a lot of people
not,
are.
This is not, forgive me, Tim, as I just talk here, but this is not something you see. And there is a base main injustice filled point to it. And there are the branches to it about what's next. And there are people in America who feel this type of conflict will keep them in power. And it freaks me out. And that's why I was watching for 48 straight hours. The others watch for sport, Tim. You're bang on. I think it's a great point you make. But this is freaking me the hell out. Nearly on par with that silent killer going door to door around this country that no one could figure out. They're both going to have different consequences.
Oh, that thing.
You know, the thing I was talking about. The reason we're in basements. But that's why I can't pull away, because something as grandiose as I mentioned earlier that I don't really even want to say again would begin this way. This is how it would start. And the devil that is social media and everything it entails would feed it and feed it and feed it. And it's been feeding it for years. At some point, Tim, I was watching NFL Network last night, Josh Norman of the Buffalo Bills. He's part of the Players Coalition. Mm-hmm. He was trying to describe why he was so fired up. And he wasn't yelling or screaming, but he was talking for an extended period on NFL Network. He said, for every act of injustice towards the black community, it was a wound that was just covered with a Band-Aid. And that has been happening for 400 years. And what happened last week in Josh Norman's description and his analogy is the Band-Aid's been ripped off and everyone can see the wound. And people are horrified that you really get to see it like that. It was as accurate an analogy as you can get to make me understand what he and a lot of other people are talking about. So, I don't know what my point was there. I'm sorry. I just kind of went.
That's okay.
Because my initial feeling was, how are you doing? And that remains my feeling. But I just wanted to kind of tell you where I'm at. And this is serious. And having the discussion it's not just serious about having the discussion, and we'll have that discussion during the show, but there are forces at work around us who want this to get way worse.
Right.
Way worse. And it hasn't yet. And that's why I watch like that. That's why I
watch. There's a lot of like I hate to even rationalize the stick to sport crew but there's a lot of people and some of them who have listened to us for a while who want us, like, is it possible to just talk about sports in this moment? And is that what people really want? And how many of those people want it because they don't want to feel uncomfortable about the conversation that we're having? Right? Like, yeah. How many people who yell out stick to sports are just really uncomfortable with the conversation that is being had and don't want to think about it or don't want to face their own thoughts, fears, ideologies?
All of it. All of it. No, you're bang on. You're bang on. But I don't have another. See, here, I mean, but to my thing is, in this moment, I don't have another. There are people in our business that can shut it out. There are people in our business that can stay in whatever lane they're in. I'm not wired like that. For good, bad, or indifferent, I am not wired like that. And I think it's important to explain to people that fact the longer we do this show from our basements during a pandemic and civil unrest.
Sticks to sports, they're not playing. Oh.
Okay, well, no, sorry, hold on. Here's some news from Major League Baseball. There is none. Right. So we could go down that road if you want. And we will, because John Paul Morosi's amazing, and he'll have a bunch to say.
Maybe we'll talk about the Cleveland Plain Dealer saying that LaMelo Ball would be the first overall pick of the Cleveland Cavaliers if they were to win the first overall pick. And we might talk about the NBA playoff structure or an MLS return to play that might be getting closer to actually going on, but we don't really know what that return to play is. Earlier today, Blake Wheeler, native of Minnesota, had some interesting things to say. And if we're sticking to sports, I don't know if you know this, but Blake Wheeler plays hockey for the Winnipeg Jets.
Captain Blake Wheeler. Captain.
Right. Right. So earlier today, he had some interesting things following an Instagram that he put up. And he's in an interesting spot, obviously, because he is a white athlete. White athletes have been asked to speak up, whether they feel comfortable or not. And he's also a native Minnesotan.
And he was on a Zoom chat earlier today. It was long. Apparently, he went for like 40 minutes. And before we break here, and thank you, Timmy, for getting us back on this train, because this is kind of where I wanted to go in this block. Blake Wheeler kind of spoke from the heart. And we're going to play you two clips from Blake Wheeler, who, by the way, we're hoping to get on the show this week, FYI. We are endeavoring to speak to Blake on Tim and Sid. In lieu of that, we'll let you hear a little of what Blake had to say today. Again, a Plymouth, Minnesota native, very close to Minneapolis. This first clip is Blake talking about watching the events of Minneapolis, a city he knows very well. Go ahead, Dylan.
Getting pictures from our family of businesses being boarded up, you know, where I'm from, which is, you know, 20 minutes outside of Minneapolis. It's crazy. You know, it's really tough, but for the most part, I'd say I'm proud of my hometown for the response and for the people standing up and not tolerating this anymore and helping each other clean up the mess that was made by the unfortunate people that took advantage of the situation.
Blake Wheeler talking about Minneapolis, and Tim, I have no horse in the race geographically. Obviously, I was born and raised in Southern Ontario. One could only imagine looking at those images in a place you know very well. Like he summed it up so well. I mean, I there's no way I could have done that. What, anything stick out on your end on that, Timmy?
Just took advantage of the situation, and I mentioned what Barack Obama said yesterday in a piece that he wrote in Medium, and he just said the overwhelming majority of participants have been peaceful, courageous, responsible, and inspiring. They deserve our respect, not condemnation. And he talked about, let's not excuse the violence or rationalize it or participate in it. There are people who are saying that that's too much. Let's plan the next steps. So there are people from what some would describe as one side or another, but it's just simply a conversation, who want us to move on. And it's interesting that Blake Wheeler was able to distinguish that even in his hometown, that there are people
absolutely
taking advantage of the situation. Yeah.
So he went in a lot of different directions today. The one I was most interested in, not to rip on anything else. It was important what he said, but I was interested in his Evander Kane comments. Like, this was a guy who was a teammate. Evander Kane currently with the Sharks. We played the clip twice on the show already. Him on Friday on First Take on ESPN asking for high profile white athletes like Sidney Crosby and Tom Brady to step up, say something, say this isn't okay. And Evander Kane's comments have sent a ripple throughout the hockey world for a lot of reasons. So I was interested in what Blake Wheeler had to say. And we remember how Evander Kane's time in Winnipeg ended, Timmy, in a rather bizarre way. So I was curious in his take on Evander Kane, which you're about to hear. And the clip starts off with Blake talking about how he is approaching this in terms of looking introspectively. Go ahead, Dylan.
I want to be real clear here. I look in the mirror about this before I look out at everyone else. You know, I wish that I was more involved sooner than I was. I wish that, you know, it didn't take me this long to get behind it in a meaningful way. But I guess, you know, what you can do is try to be better going forward. So, you know, that's kind of been my position on it, is I want to be a part of the change going forward. I agree with what Kaner said. I think he did a phenomenal job. And to be completely honest with you, Kaner, you know, he was on this even when I played with him. You know, he was saying these things even when I played with him. And so I really applaud him for the work he's done and the job he's done kind of being the voice of this movement, especially in our sport.
Really interesting comments there from Blake Wheeler. Again, we're endeavoring to talk to Blake at some point this week, Timmy, because time is tight and I have taken too much of it. Final word on either Blake or this segment to you. What were your thoughts on what you just heard?
I have three tweets that I'd like to get to. Let's do them after the break. We're going to take enough. It right now. Michael Collins, Donovan Bennett, Dave Zirin, John Morosi, all lined up on this edition of Tim and Sid across the Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360, and at 6 p.m. Eastern, Sportsnet. Some quick tweets from the opening segment here on Tim and Sid. Matt writes in and says, to those who say stick to sports, the function of the media in a democracy, of which sports media is a subsidiary, is not only to tell you or speak to the stories you just want to hear right now. You should definitely not just stick to sports. And against the better judgment, in order to have a conversation, normally I don't. If you don't have a name on your Twitter account and you have zero followers, I tend to think you're either a bot or a troll. But for the sake of the conversation, Sane Canadian wrote in and said, and it sounds like he is watching, she is watching, because it's directly to us, and that would be a sophisticated bot. But I'm not uncomfortable with the conversation. I just don't want to have it and listen to it all day, every day. I understand that part. Your job is to talk about sports. Do your job. Look around Twitter and Instagram. Every single Twitter account of every single sports franchise in North America right now is talking about what we talked about in the opening block. And Dan Ruiz writes in and says, Tim, I remember a story that you told in the Uncut days. That was our podcast. You said you had a conversation with an American political analyst on professional politicians. Sidney, I don't know if you remember our conversation about professional politicians, but I think the idea of watching news as sport is because people fell for those professional politicians. That from Dan Ruiz with the hashtag Tim and Sid.
Thanks for that, Tim. Appreciate it. He's talking to sports crowd. It's a tough day for him. It's a tough week for him. I understand the notion, but it's tough. Yeah. Michael Collins of ESPN has been kind enough to join us. Mike, thanks for coming on. The Stick to Sports crew, it's a tough argument to make right now, isn't it? It's kind of tough.
I don't, you know, when I hear stuff like that from people, like you said, with zero followers and not having their name attached to something like that, those are the same people that then, when they say stick to sports, are the ones that complain about athletes that have no personality because they show no opinion and don't talk about anything other than the sport that they play or the sport that's out there. And I usually refer to people like that as hypocrites. And listen, there are times when, yeah, talking about sports 24/7 is what we're supposed to do, but it's not all the time. It's not 24/7. And I would love to say that I'm sorry that you don't like having an uncomfortable conversation, but I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry that we have to have uncomfortable conversations, because from uncomfortable conversations come change. And if we're going to get to a place where we are all as human beings trying to be on the same team and find common ground and peaceful existence between one another, then uncomfortable conversations have to be had about uncomfortable situations. And for anyone to try and put their head in the sand and say, I don't want to talk about that, I don't want to hear about that, and put your fingers in your ear and say, la, 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 guess what? It doesn't go away and it doesn't change. One of the reasons that we've gotten to the place that we've gotten to is because people are tired of being pushed to the side when you hear things like, well, we'll sit down and have a conversation about that. Let's sit down and talk, but let's keep order. And what that means is we're going to keep things the way they are in order to just quell you. And so times like these, you look out and what you should feel is empathy for our species. So question, why has it come to that? Why did we need to get to this point? Especially, you know, coming from America and being a man who's half black himself and have had plenty of what I would call uncomfortable, what others would call scary moments in dealing with some police. Seeing things like this happen over and over again, you get to a point where you say, when do I get to stop having to turn the other cheek? Even though I know in my heart that that is wrong in a way as well. And so to hear people say, because of the business that we're in, you know, just stick to talking to sports, is like having someone say to LeBron James, shut up and dribble. Mm-hmm. Like, as a human being, we're all supposed to be able to talk about things that affect other human beings and things that affect us as a society. So don't devalue who we all are and what we need to talk about because it makes you uncomfortable. And if it does make you that uncomfortable, then that is definitely a conversation then that you need to have, because it's not going to go away.
Yeah, we had that conversation in the opening segment. Welcome to my uncomfort is what you're allowed to say. We've done a lot of talking in our careers, 20 years in the business. We've done a lot of listening in the last week. And one of the things that struck me as you were talking, Michael, was, listen, with the proliferation of media in all its many different forms right now, if you don't want to hear a dissenting voice, one that is different than yours right now in this world, you don't have to hear it, which is why Twitter becomes this powder keg, and why sports and the people who say stick to sports, why the sports conversation is so important, because that's a place where you may hear a voice that might be different from yours, and yet you still have something in common. And that is the love of sports. And that can be, listen, go ahead.
The other beauty of sports is that it teaches you that sometimes losing is okay, that it hurts, it sucks, and you don't like it. But your team doesn't go undefeated. And you know what? It's okay. You get another chance later. And by dividing yourself away and only hearing the things that you want to hear, then what happens is you divide yourself into a team that decides we win at all costs. And so you allow for things to start happening that shouldn't be happening. And the beauty of what sports gives us is the opportunity to cheer and love and root for our team, knowing that sometimes our team are going to gut wrench us, that things are going to happen in sports that aren't necessarily fair, that we're going to lose, but that we will get through them, and that it's still okay to love your team without necessarily hating the other team.
Right.
In a bad way, it's okay to say, I don't like that team, or we'll say playfully, I hate that team. You know, as an American football fan, I love the Philadelphia Eagles, and I tell people all the time I hate the Cowboys, but I don't actually mean that I hate the players on the Cowboys. I know some of the Cowboys, and, you know, I know players from other teams that I don't root for, and I don't wish them ill will, or I don't devalue them as human beings because they play for another team. And so I love the fact that that's one of the greatest lessons sports teaches us, is that you learn the most from losing, and that it doesn't take away from your team or your caring for your team. Yeah. And that sometimes in the big picture of things, you know, losing can be a way to learn, even though it's a lesson that you don't like to learn.
ESPN's Michael Collins here on Tim and Sid. Golf is his wheelhouse, but we haven't stuck to sports, and I don't mind that at all here in this interview. But Mike, before we do let you go, one of the reasons why we asked you to come on today, and we thank you for doing that, Tiger Woods put out a statement today.
Mm-hmm.
And part of there was a line in there, and you alluded to it a little bit in your comments already during our conversation, but there was a line in it that I found really interesting. He said, "We can make our points without burning the very neighborhoods that we live in." And I think I don't disagree with him, but I also think there comes a point where a strongly worded letter and turning over a coffee table are not the same thing. I think
yeah.
One gets a different reaction than the other. How did you take that statement from one of still the most popular athletes in the world?
So I don't necessarily agree with that line, and there's reasons why, but I'll start here. Number one, Tiger comes from a sport that had written into its bylaws that they would not allow African Americans to play. So he comes from a place and an understanding of what racism really is. Where he doesn't come from is a place that understands why people would feel the need to burn down where they are. And this is the hard thing that to try to explain to people that haven't come from a place like that. And that is, if I don't value myself as a human being, and I feel like the world doesn't value me as a human being, why the hell would I value a building, a TV, a thing? If I am not valued as a person, then you think that I'm going to care about burning down bricks and wood? Why would I? You think I value that? You think I value what you built? And so that's the difficulty in this for even someone like Tiger Woods. The other problem for someone as iconic as Tiger, and you have to remember too, when was the last time that both Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods came out and spoke
Great
on
point.
Any social issues?
Yeah.
Never.
Great point.
It's never happened
Great
before.
Point.
So for people to expect Tiger Woods to be the beacon of social issues is a ridiculous thing to think. It is a ridiculous thing to think that he should be the person that everyone turns to and goes, you know, hey, in times like this, Tiger, what should we do? Like that. He's in a position that isn't necessarily fair to put him in, even though we still ask that of him. Should we expect it from him? I say no. I think it's great that he came out and commented on it. But I understand that you're asking someone who has never been in that position. He's not Muhammad Ali. He's not Jim Brown. He's not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He's not any of these people. And yet in a situation like this, we're expecting him to be that. And that's just not who he is. Now, What's the flip side of that? Can you imagine what the backlash would have been if Tiger would have came out with a statement and said, I'm fundamentally against the racism that we see. Get your pitchforks out and let's burn the whole thing down. Right. Like, we could go the other extreme as well. And there would be arguments for and against that as well. Because when it comes down to it, like I said, when you're asked to turn the other cheek, at what point do you say, I'm not doing that anymore? I'm not going to believe you when you say to me, you know what? We need to just sit and talk about this. You said that the last time and the time before that and five times before that. So you think I'm going to keep watching all of these African-American men get killed and then nothing happened to the people that do that? And you think I'm going to keep believing you when you say we're going to sit down and talk this out? Yeah, no. Nah. Right. Not doing that no more. My mom, who's white and is sitting next to me as I'm doing this, brought up something that Malcolm X said back in 1964, and he gave a speech, and it's called By the Ballot or the Bullet. And I think that's the point we're at right now. And it's scary to think that. It's terrifying to think that. And I don't want to think that. We should be focusing on finding a way to love each other. And we are at a point right now where everyone is divided and picking teams. And regardless of if somebody on your team is doing something that is lying, cheating, stealing, or hurting someone else, because they're on your team, you're okay with it? Nah. That's why you're not going to hear me talk about, I know a lot of good cops. I know a lot of good human beings that put on uniforms. I know a lot of them, men and women, good human beings that put on uniforms. But you know what?
Me too.
In every police precinct, in every area of law enforcement out there, you know who the bad cops are. And if you're not saying or doing anything about them, then guess what? You're not a good cop. That doesn't mean that you're a terrible person. And that doesn't mean that I have hatred or despise anything about you. But I'm certainly not going to come out and be like, I know a lot of good cops. Nah, I know a lot of wonderful, amazing people that put a uniform on every single day and do the right thing every day. But there's a difference.
Listen, we're long time first times. It's a shame that it had to come in the middle of a global pandemic and some of the most honest and concerning racial conversation that this generation has seen. But we won't shy away from the conversation, and we appreciate you having it with us. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, man, I am really looking forward to the time where we can actually talk about some golf and some fun give back. When we talk about normalcy, it used to be about, man, when this pandemic is over, I'm hugging everybody and this is going to be great. And now it's just like, you know what we need to do? Make sure that everyone stops saying, well, 2020 can't get any worse. Okay, well, that's got to stop immediately.
Yeah. Thanks that hasn't worked.
On, fellas. I can't wait to talk again.
Take care, Mike. Thanks.
Us, Steve.
Thank you.
There's Michael Collins, ESPN, former PGA Tour caddy. We still have a bunch of guys lined up here, and we got to move along. That doesn't mean we cut the conversation short, but we got to cut the conversation short. We'll have more of it next right here on Tim and Sid. Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet TV. This is Tim and Sid on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet. Donovan Bennett will join us at the top of the hour. And Sid and I going through a lot of the tweets, going through a lot of the other parts of the conversation today. There is an interesting progression in the NBA conversation, Sid. Would you like to walk down the road of what is being proposed in Orlando for the NBA?
So this isn't the Board of Governors are going to get together and maybe talk about stuff. Like, there's some potential meat on this board that you're going to throw me here?
I think that there is definitely the Board of Governors are going to have to get together on this. I think this is the first volley into the air to see whether or not someone wants to smash it down or if someone will dig it back up as they go volleyball on this.
I love a good volleyball reference, Tim. Love it.
So we'll see if the libero gets to this eventually or not. But Woj said, Woj said that the league is going to spend the week finalizing the format, but it seems as though they are going to have a 22-team format that would include 8 regular season games in order to people to get their sea legs back, and then a play-in tournament between the bottom 4 teams for the 8 seed in each conference, which would not affect the Raptors all that much. So if you're still going old school East versus West, the Raptors would match up with Brooklyn if the standings stay the same. But Orlando, remember, is just right a there. Half game behind Brooklyn, and the Sixers are 6 with an 8.5 game lead on Brooklyn. So there could be some movement if indeed you get 8 regular season games to figure out how you're going to play in the postseason. And who you're going
to. Forgive me, in this reported plan, just the 22 teams get invited.
Just the 22 teams. So 8 to 11 are right. The ones that can jockey for position. And they were doing that in order to make sure that a team that was close wasn't just going to get chopped off. And, oh, by the way, you might get Zion Williams in this conversation.
That's good TV. Zion is great TV whenever you can get him. So I'm not mad at this plan for that. The insistence on the 8 regular season games in this is it's a story that has floated around the entire thing, and that this would cement how important it is for a lot of markets to get to 70 games and to get the local TV contract locked in. And most of these clubs were 4 or 5 games shy of hitting 70.
They know
so they know exactly where, bingo. They know exactly what they are doing. I think 8 games is a pretty good warm-up. It's going to be more of a warm-up than the NHL would get in their proposed return-to-play plan.
Right.
And I don't mind it. I don't mind it. I mean, a play-in tournament, look, the NBA's been trying. This is one of those situations where leagues are going to try stuff they've been dying to try for a year and a half to 2 years. The play-in tournament for spots 7 and 8, is there a better time to experiment? Is there a better time to dip your toe in the water and see if it's a TV product that people, although I don't know if you can gauge it completely by these ratings because it's so unique, but you know what I'm saying, Tim. I mean, why not now? Why not, Pop? Why not try to play in tournament? Why not?
Just to correct you, it is for the 8th position, not the 7th.
Oh, not 7th. Strictly for 8th? Okay.
For the
8th. I still don't mind it. Still don't mind it, and I think it'll get eyes, and I'm all for whatever gets him back on the court. Because it's
also
be Woj. Playoff.
Woj was reporting right now, as the NBA models for a 22-team format for a July 31st resumption in Orlando, the proposed timeline for teams as the last possible date for an NBA Finals Game 7 would be October 12th. Figure that out with wherever a next season would start and how long that would take you to get to that point. And we have another dilemma on the horizon after that.
Well, let's play it after October 12th like it's more normal than it is now. What's an off season in the NBA? 2 months? 2.5 months? Something like that?
Yeah.
If you're starting June. At Christmas, that's basically what this is. Right. Have your off season, have your draft, do everything at a pace that is somewhat normal, and you can have yourself the biggest Christmas Day start to a season imaginable. Let it breathe. Let the NFL have their stage. Mm-hmm. Let them take it. Because the NFL does have a Christmas Day game scheduled. They're starting to walk into those waters as well. But time-wise, it makes sense. You can have a normal offseason, whatever normal is at that stage, Tim, however you define it. So
and
that
keep
makes
in
sense.
Mind, keep in mind, Gary Bettman came on here and said, who knows, maybe we start the NHL season with the Winter Classic. That's Jan 1, folks.
Yeah.
Right?
I forgot he said that. That's a great point.
We
start off big.
We stuck to sports. When we come back, there Donovan Bennett will join us, John Paul Morosi on baseball's restart, and James Dolan. Nah, never mind. Tim and Sid, Sportsnet Radio Network, and Sportsnet TV.
What did James Dolan do or not do?
Never mind.
I want to talk about James Dolan.
Sid. Time for Tim and Sid. Time for Tim and Sid. Time for Tim and Sid.
Oh, yeah. It's time for real sports talk with Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sexero.
Well, thank you very much, Sheepdogs. This is the final hour of Tim and Sid, now available on Sportsnet. I want to welcome those watching on the mains across the country. If you'd like to see the first hour, you can do so in podcast form, wherever you get your podcasts, or just tune in to Sportsnet 360, full 2 hours, as always, available on Sportsnet 590. In the first hour, we spoke to Michael Collins of ESPN, who is, I want to talk golf with him because he's so much fun.
He's fantastic. He's absolutely fantastic.
He is one of the better analysts out there. He doesn't take himself too seriously. We had a serious conversation with him in the first hour, but he doesn't take himself too seriously, and he's a lot of fun. We'll talk with him a little later on. Still to come, Donovan Bennett and John Morosi. Yesterday, we had a conversation surrounding the statement from Roger Goodell about the times that we find ourselves in. And I asked you, Sid Sexero, if the NFL is capable of evolving. And the Colin Kaepernick issue is one that raged strong at the time in the NFL and has been looked at with a lot of hindsight in the last week and a half, including someone who was up close and personal to it.
The guy who cut Kaepernick's checks, Jed York, CEO of the San Francisco 49ers. So we're going back 4 years now. And Tim, the one fear I had from an NFL stance is that the history would get revisionist, especially now. And that's what kind of bothered me about the NFL statement Roger Goodell pointed out. And I talked to you about it. Sorry, I yelled at you about it yesterday. So last night, I'm watching NFL Network. And Jim Trotter is doing an interview with Jed York. Now, Jed York is contributing $1 million to social injustice, and the premise of the interview was the Niners are doing good things. Mm-hmm. Then Jed York, again, a guy who employed Colin Kaepernick, and not long after 2016 and the kneeling, didn't employ Colin Kaepernick like 31 other owners, talked about why back then happened compared to the reaction now. And I almost threw up when I heard this. I'm not exaggerating. I nearly threw up when I heard Jed York, who owns an NFL team, try to rationalize what went on 4 years ago with Kaepernick to today. This is what he said last night, and I'm surprised this didn't get more run. This is what he said last night on NFL Network. Go ahead.
I think the piece that we missed in 2016, and it's a fairly simple piece, I don't know that anybody actually addressed what the issue was, and we're trying to fight racism in this country. And I think that's what we need to clearly call out. And you can't defeat something if you don't actually admit that that's what you're fighting.
They didn't clearly call out racism 4 years ago when Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid and other players around the league were taking knees. I didn't think it was that cloudy of a definition, Tim, as to what was going on 4 years ago. Is that rather revisionist in your eyes? Because I can't believe he said that.
Joe Lockhart, who's the former NFL director of PR, made it about the controversy being bad for business. That's the way the NFL looked at it. Now, Joe Lockhart has said, in hindsight, he was wrong. In hindsight, the NFL was wrong. And I don't know if Jed York is trying to tie the cute little bow on this, but it does sound
holy cow. They
are attempting to go back and right the wrong. The one good thing I'll say from Joe Lockhart, Sixero, was that he did say that Roger Goodell tried to persuade teams to sign Colin Kaepernick. And I didn't know that that would have been the case back then.
But what does that mean? Like, how
Take
hard did
whatever.
He try to pursue?
That's,
no,
that's
I, you know
quote.
What I hear.
Yeah,
it. No, like,
that's
I'm,
the quote.
I'm, but I'm talking out loud. Like, mm-hmm. That's a nice quote for Roger Goodell, but there's no real context to it. You don't know what exactly that means. You don't know how hard he worked. I don't know. It's just I the feeling I'm getting from the NFL, from a league and ownership standpoint, is that nothing has changed, and they would like to rewrite how that played out 4 years ago.
Right.
They don't get that option. They don't. And of all the leagues where you need to call BS, and for the record, Major League Baseball, who celebrate Jackie Robinson, have not sent out anything as a league. Nothing.
The teams, I was just watching the internet as we were doing the first, but the teams right now, it's just like one after another. I'm just getting bzz,
bzz, oh, baseball bzz, now. Yeah, bzz, yeah. Yeah. Now it's coming out. Now it's coming out. You're right. So I just, with each passing day from an ownership and league standpoint, right, I am furious at the National Football League. Absolutely furious at the revisionist nature in which they are looking at this. Donovan Bennett is a good friend of the. Sorry, Tim, did you want to follow up with that? Forgive me.
Nope, I'm good with that. Okay, go ahead.
Donovan Bennett, he was kind enough to come on the show Friday when things just felt different. Donovan last night on sportsnet.ca put up a column titled "Black People Are Dying, White Athletes Need to Speak Out." I know a lot of people listening to this show and watching the show would have partaken in that column. I encourage it. Donovan Bennett is joining us on the line right now.
Don't 1-800 us. Don't 1-800 us. All right?
Don't.
1-800-DOLLAR, Negro. You've reached...
Why did you do it again? He totally... He asked you nicely not to do that. He asked you nicely not to do that. That's not cool.
Press one. Press
this show... This Colin show doesn't Kaepernick. Need Press this Rooney. Show doesn't need a Rooney Rule, to be fair about it. I can't speak for others. This show doesn't support. Need one. This show does not need one, friend.
Systemic oppression? Please stay on the line.
That's not
cool. Hello, fellas. How are you doing?
Don't segue out of that quick.
I needed to know what the elevator music would have been at the end of that when you howled for an operator.
Yeah. Can I get some imaging on the 1-800-DOLLAR-NEGRO segment? Maybe a sting? 1-800-DOLLAR-NEGRO? What should we talk about today?
Well, clearly, whatever we bring up, I'm not really sure where you're going to take it. So I'm going to leave it in your lap, Mr. Bennett.
Well, how about this? Because I've had some time to let it all marinate. There are some things I wish I had done or said earlier, and some of the things that come from learning, which every human being should probably strive to do. Is there anything, because Friday I felt like what happened to our Friday show, and maybe this is overstating our importance, DJ, as I'm not wont to do, but sometimes our conversations, people just grab clips, put those clips out, and that becomes the entire conversation. Is there anything with some time to let it marinate over the weekend, what you saw on the weekend? Is there anything that you'd like to add to our conversation from Friday that you didn't get in?
Interesting.
Or just something that you wish you had have said? I get 2 hours to do it, so it's...
Yeah. No,
I feel like I'm trying to offer you the same opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I've said so much over the last couple of days, it's all a blur. I think the one thing I'd say when people try to minimize whether or not this is an issue or basically why it's an issue, we have 400 years of evidence. Like, we are not working with a small data pool at this time. The difference is that technology has changed, and so we've been able to see these things, but even that's not that much of a difference. Like, we saw a death in the string of deaths live on Facebook Live a couple years ago. I think for whatever reason, we're having this greater conversation now because we are at home. We all are a little bit more introspective. And so for those who are saying, well, stick to sports, as you guys spoke about earlier, well, one, we don't have any sports. Like what sports are we sticking to? Actually, I think it's amazing that we don't have any sports to distract us. I couldn't tell you about the last NBA thought that crossed my mind, because it doesn't seem that important right now. But more importantly, because sports eventually are going to come back, and at some point, other things in our lives are going to come back, and people are going to stop posting black tiles on their IG. When it's going to stop trending and be a fad. Most importantly, what we need to remember is that, as Nelson Mandela wisely said, sports has the power to change the world. So don't just put that poster above your bed. Actually live it. He said it has the power to inspire, it has the power to unite. So let's actually engage in sports to maybe heal some of these wounds that we have as a society. Because as a sports fan, you have power. As an athlete, you have power. As an owner, as a coach, you have power. So let's actually use the power, the industry, the economy of sports to make the world around it much better.
Donovan Bennett here on Tim and Sid. You mentioned the word fad, DJ, and I thought of that as I saw people take pics for the gram in front of burnt out and looted stores today on social media. And there's a part of me that, like, I've been thinking about that a lot the last 24, 48 hours. How many people on social media that just think this is a cool cause in the moment and don't really understand the gravity of the situation walk away from it? Do you think this gets fad treatment from a certain section of social media?
100%. It does. And what we're having is people are getting in line for participation ribbons. And it's like, hey, look, just so you know, not racist. Just holding up my hand over here. I like everybody. And it's like, well, thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. That should be the default. We should understand that. Not for everyone, but we'd hope. But the real thing is, okay, what's the work? What's the tangible action you're going to put behind your now willingness to be an ally and a partner? And I actually think the phrasing ally is a bit misguided. It's being used now as everyone, you know, wants to be part of the conversation. Like, if we're at the United Nations, an ally is someone's like, hey, if we got aligned interests, I'll back you and you'll back me. Like, no, I need a partner. I need someone in the struggle with me who feels the pain, who has the same amount of passion. And so I will be very, very curious to see whether it's people on the gram who, you know, just want to do it for clout and maybe a bit of a clear conscience, or it's athletes who all of a sudden have found a conscience. I want to see 10 months, 10 years from now, if they are talking about these same issues with the same conviction. Because all of the people who said they were hurt and surprised and now motivated, you know who wasn't hurt and surprised? Black people, minorities, people of color, people who have been marginalized and oppressed. They weren't surprised or hurt because they've seen it in their communities all the time, so they weren't surprised. They weren't hurt because really they've been conditioned to understand it and they've been motivated. So help us for the next generations to change this. Don't just help us right now, because I can't take your IG post to the bank and cash it. I can't take it to my job and get equal treatment, and I surely can't take it with me to a funeral when I'm putting flowers on a casket. So I need some more help every other day of the week, not just on Blackout Tuesday.
Donovan Bennett joining us here, a longtime friend of this show, was with us at the start when we were a podcast, and has been with us in various forms throughout. And as you know, Donovan, because you've known me throughout, some of my favorite stories in sports are the ones that uplift, the Jackie Robinsons, the Muhammad Ali's. We have a picture of the Cleveland Summit in our studio. But as a person who I work with and respect a ton once told me, those are some of the most romanticized moments in sports by white dudes like me. Especially if Colin Kaepernick can't take a knee. I didn't mean that to rhyme, but it did, and I spit bars. But do you have any idea why it feels like we haven't progressed much from those seminal moments and how we learn from? Like, I put the picture of the Cleveland Summit, or I asked for the picture of the Cleveland Summit, because I thought that it was a really important time in sports. But now as we look back, I mean, I was going to swear, that's almost 50 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the place that we are in right now is disrespectful to the Cleveland Summit, if we're being honest. It's disrespectful to John Carlos and Tommy Smith putting literally their lives on the line as they put a fist up in solidarity at the 1968 Olympics. If we don't, with urgency, change the way our world is right now, everything that you've talked about is for naught. Everything that you talked about is for vain. Those things were not just done so that life was better in that moment, is that so it would be appreciably better right now. That's what legacy is. Is taking something and giving it to the next generation in a better situation. And in sports specifically, that is the case. Players make more money than they ever have. They have more agency and opportunity, really, to make change than they ever did. But yet many athletes do much less with that same platform that was built off the backs of the people that you were just talking about. So, yeah, I mean, I think those photos are romantic because, in a way, when we literally look at the scenes that we're seeing right now, those photos are sad. And that's why I think it is incumbent upon athletes specifically in this very situation, from my perspective, white athletes with power, with privilege, to help this conversation continue to move forward.
Donovan Bennett here on Tim and Sid. I think I know the answer to this, but I'll ask it anyway, Deej. What was the reaction to your column last night?
There's three reactions. One, never really thought about things that way. I thought I was an ally. I clearly wasn't. Thank you for writing it, which I think is the best response. Two, this is not a Canadian issue. You're race baiting. You're the one who is playing the race card. And I've said it before. I'll say it again. The race card is not something you play. Is something that you were dealt. It is in the deck that you were given. It is given to you because some people in our society, as presently constituted, start on third base, and other people, they start with two strikes. So race just, it is in existence. It's a fact. And then other people felt like, well, no, it's not athletes, and specifically in this case, white athletes or white owners or white coaches, it's not their responsibility to speak up because it's not their issue and maybe they don't feel comfortable. And I'm sorry, but listen, I've been uncomfortable for a while as a minority in North America. It's time for some other people to be uncomfortable. And I do not accept that these athletes can say, well, I'm focusing on my task. I'm going to stick to sports. I get it. Not everyone is going to be an expert on everything. We're not asking you to weigh in on European or Asian geopolitics. We're asking you to weigh in on something that's happening literally on your front doorstep. That is literally black or white. Do you have racism in your heart or you don't? Do you want people to be equal or you don't? And I don't remember, you guys let me know, I don't remember any of those stick to sports comments when Haley Wickenheiser was motivating many celebrities and athletes to get PPE and resources for the frontline workers and the healthcare workers. I didn't hear any stick to sports comments then. I don't remember any stick to sports comments when I've gone to various marathons and they're raising money for great causes. I've been to Cure for Cancer run. I don't remember the Erase Racism run. Do you guys remember? I've never seen it. I'm telling you right now, my people would be out in droves for the Erase Racism run. At the finish line, there's going to be one line with granola bars and water, and there's going to be another line with Ting and roti and patties. And you know which line I'm going to be in. I don't remember there being an issue for all of these other causes in our society where athletes all of a sudden aren't supposed to speak out, where teams and leagues and organizations aren't supposed to use their power for influence. Last I checked, does the NFL have a program called Salute for Service? Are we helping our troops? Do they not have a program called Tackle for Cancer? Racism, just like cancer, is a disease. It's one that goes unseen, but it still impacts everybody. So I'd just love for others, now that all of a sudden everyone cares about this cause, to care about it in the same way they care about other causes that impact all of us in society. Because even if you're not impacted directly by climate change, if you're not helping that situation, you're hurting. Even if you're not impacted directly by a health situation, if you're not getting a vaccine, you're hurting. Well, even if you're not impacted directly by racism, if you're not helping, you're hurting.
Doctors and nurses also can't cash their superheroes checks that they're getting right now on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. I will say, before we let you go, it is working. Like Jonathan Toews, Blake Wheeler, like it is working. There are the part of this that I don't think people understand. They just get their backs up when they hear white athletes have to step up. Is what you're asking for is a conversation with everybody involved. You can't have a we had the conversation with the Cleveland Summit in the 60s when there was one side talking and some of the other side listened. What you were asking for is a conversation where people all talk, and it's not one side or the other. It's just a conversation. Am I correct?
You're 100% correct. I just hope this conversation is not one that is quick and one that is for PR, one that is real. Because Akeem Alou was talking about a lot of these issues a week ago, and I didn't hear any of these voices then. So all of a sudden, I'm starting to hear some voices now. So I love the fact that the Me Too movement was a movement and not a moment. I hope that this is a movement and not a moment.
Feels like a movement. From the outside looking in perspective, feels like a movement. But who the hell knows nowadays, dude? Who the hell knows?
But you guys are still talking about it, so credit to you, because you guys have power to make sure that it's a movement.
Yeah. I was going to give you horns at the end of that, but I didn't want to seem disingenuous.
I will always take horns.
But Donovan, if you want to keep talking,
you invented them, so who am I?
Yeah, they're yours.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah,
Donovan. If you want to finish your point on how on powerful show, Tim and I are, go ahead. Finish your point on how powerful we are.
Sid wants to hear it.
I mean, my young son, as you've mentioned, his middle name is named after one of you.
One of us.
And the raccoon that terrorizes my neighborhood is named after another. So you guys do have power.
We have the same diet.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, DJ.
Thank you. Thank you for having the convo, fellas.
Let us know when you need us.
Likewise.
There is Donovan Bennett. I was afraid if I gave him the horns, I'd get the 1-800 on the way out, too.
Yeah, I need to figure out a way to retort to his opening to the interviews. Because it's not, I wasn't ready for it the first time, nor was I ready. You were more ready for it this time than I was. I was caught completely off guard, and Donovan just came in and just leg dropping. Like, I was not prepared for it in any which way at all. But we appreciate Donovan. We love him. How long have we known that guy?
Too long. He was a university student at Western.
Third string running back. I remember. Third string running back. Third string.
Coming up, is baseball on the way back? I figured you just leave it at third string because I don't, you know.
I could have left. I should have left it. No,
if you want a Randy McCauley shot too, whatever. Go ahead.
Better singer too, Randy McCauley. Whatever. Better singer.
Is baseball on the way back, or have we got our hopes up a little too high? John Paul Morosi will join us next to discuss right here on Tim and Sid, Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet Television. This is Tim and Sid, Sportsnet Radio Network, Sportsnet 360. Getting to the good news of the day before we say goodbye. Case writes in and says, DJ was right to call out the stick-to-sports crowd when they praised Haley Wickenheiser for raising awareness in a pandemic in this country. Those fools should check their privilege. Can't have it both ways. Hashtag Tim and Sid. By the way, go read Haley Wickenheiser. If you are one of those guys, go read Haley Wickenheiser's Twitter over the last month and a half.
Oh, really?
Yep, she is...
Okay.
She is not the stick to sports crowd.
No. And it was an interesting point DJ brought up. By the way, Tim, I do have a contribution to the good news of the day. If you need one,
nice.
I did come across one that I can't believe I didn't pitch you before the show. Forgive me, but I do have a small contribution to good news of the day.
Are you batting leadoff on the good news of the day?
No, it's more of a cleanup because I think you're going to have more stories of importance. Mine isn't. I just judging by the tone that you set on that in that segment, I don't think it's a leadoff, But I'll give me the second last one, because you usually close it with how many recoveries, and that's the most important one. Give me second last on that, and I'll hit you with one.
Good with that.
I can't. The one of the better news I can hear in the next little while from a sporting sense is baseball has a deal. We're not there yet. And if I were covering baseball every day like John Paul Morosi, I'd be getting pissed because I don't know what they're waiting on. John Paul Morosi joining us from MLB Network and Fox. JP, how are you? How's the family? First off, how's everything going?
Doing well, gentlemen. Thanks, as always, for the conversation, for having me on the call. And you guys always do a fantastic show, and in so many ways we need it. And your thoughtfulness now more than ever. So thanks, as always, for keeping the conversation going.
Cheers, brother.
Appreciate that, one. And two, is there anything you'd like to add before we start talking baseball? Because I know you're in Ann Arbor, Michigan. That's where you call home. But you are a global citizen, if we've ever had one on the show. What's your take?
Well, thanks for the question. To me, this is a time for, I think, all of us to listen, to reach out, and both for in ways that are large and global, and also very local. I think that it's incumbent on all of us that I think first of all our parents or have any sort of platform in our communities to just find ways to foster dialogue and conversation and just set the right example for our children. And I think that's probably been the prism through which I've been thinking about all of this. And I last summer I was coaching my then 6-year-old, now 7-year-old's T-ball team. And at the end, I was really lucky. MLB helped me out, and I gave them some books about Jackie Robinson, written by his daughter, and the lessons from that book. And the book is for a child, and I remember talking about it with my wife, the language in the book is stark. It is jarring, but it's for kids to see and for kids to understand. And it's our job, I think, as parents to not hide from that reality of racism, which we're obviously confronted with now. And I think that for my wife and I, a lot of our conversations have been, how do we make sure that when we talk to our children about Jackie Robinson, Martin Luther King Jr., other historical figures, that we make the point that, listen, they went through this now, but they went through this then, but look at what's still happening now. And look at what we still have to reckon with on the television to explain to our children just the need to be vigilant. And I think the greatest need is to be citizens. And that's true in the U.S. It's true in Canada. It's true everywhere. And I hope that all of us through this time think a lot and listen a lot and focus on citizenship and kindness above all else.
John Paul Morosi here on Tim and Sid. JP, forgive me for prying. How old are your kids?
7, 5, and 2.
So has this been a situation where one of them has brought it up to you, or you feel that because it's probably been on in your home as much as it is in mine and everyone else's, you felt the need to kind of bring it up and try and get ahead of it, so to speak, in terms of how you describe it to them?
Yes, I think a little bit of both. Our 7-year-old is pretty, she's pretty inquisitive, and she'll ask a lot of questions. She read an American Girl book, which the books actually do a really good job in certain periods of time about the book she read was about the March on Washington, and part of that book was devoted to the tragic death of Emmett Till during the Civil Rights era, and she was asking a lot of questions, and she could not fathom in that moment that someone was killed because of the color of their skin. And so I had to explain to her as best I could what happened in language that a 7-year-old hopefully could understand. And the reality that, and we're fortunate here in Ann Arbor with such a diverse community, I could mention classmates that she has who are of different races and explain, well, these are your friends. This is how you regard them. And so it's up to you to never be in a situation where you're allowing anybody in school to use language or to exclude based on any reason, but certainly most of all race. And I think that to me, guys, is where I think a lot of the constructive dialogue has to focus, because unfortunately we see images of the adults on television and some of the things they say or signs they have, and realize that some of them perhaps you could try, but maybe you could not convince them or bring them over to a more empathetic side. But the children, to me, are where we have hope, are where we can, I think, do our best work, our most good, and just to model to them what type of citizens we can hope that they're going to become. And I think that, so to me, it's been a matter of listening, answering her questions. And, you know, my wife is Mexican-American, so we have certainly different cultural connections in our own house to think about how we self-identify and how the girls are free to identify however they want, and languages that we speak and celebrate. So I think it's just a matter of listening and encouraging and giving them the right framework to think about the world as best we can. And I think most of all, give them the proper context and information, and let them ask their own questions and arrive at their own decisions, and just hopefully guide them along the way.
Well said. John Paul Morosi here on Tim and Sid. I'm going to give the Stick to Sports crowd their wish. let's talk a little baseball here.
Kind of.
Are we getting closer to the point where we might be able to stick to sports, even if we wanted to stick to sports?
I think so. I look at it, and I'm going to be optimistic first and foremost. I look at the next week to 10 days as being very important. And I had thought, if you had asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said that we were going to have a deal by yesterday, and of course we don't. I still look at the way that it's being discussed, and reportedly, I know Jeff Passan had the story yesterday that and Ken Rosenthal as well, that perhaps MLB would be comfortable going with as few games as 50. And that might be a number where they'd be comfortable paying out the prorated salary at that number of games, because so much of baseball's revenue comes from the postseason. And so when you think about the overall money they're paying out, I think from the owner's perspective, it seems intuitive to me that the goal is to put as much of a regular season forward as you can without spending the maximum amount of money, of course, and then still having the postseason exist, because the money maker is the postseason. And what you cannot risk, I think from baseball's perspective, understandably, is that you play so many games or push the end of the regular season so far into the fall that you then jeopardize the possibility or the vibrancy and the vitality of the postseason itself. And that to me is the question here. So if MLB is truly comfortable at 50 games with a full proration of salary, then I am especially optimistic, because then that seems to me to be the backstop on all this, and then you just keep trying to add as many games at whatever rate that you can before you arrive at a point where both sides are comfortable, and hopefully that's where the deal is struck, and hopefully that deal is struck at some point in time in the next week or so.
John Paul Morosi, Fox Sports, MLB Network, here on Tim and Sid. JP, you mentioned this deal. This deal is not done yet, but this is the precursor, as Tim and I have talked about for a while here, to the next big deal. December of next year when the CBA runs out. Based on how you've seen Rob Manfred approach the last couple of months, based on how you've seen union head Tony Clark approach the last few months, who has done the better job of setting the stage for next year for their constituents, do you think?
It's a great question. It may be, and this is not to give you the non-answer, I think it's probably a little bit difficult to judge it in the moment until we see what this agreement looks
Absolutely.
Like. I think that in general, I think the commissioner, under some very difficult circumstances, has done a very admirable job. And I think he's got to try to satisfy large market clubs, smaller market clubs. We're seeing all around the game, and this I think is a true litmus test and truth serum of where we're at in the sport, we're seeing teams having to really dramatically cut the salaries of a lot of employees, and that would not be happening if the economic uncertainty was not very real. And while revenues have been strong in the game for a long time, fully understand that, a lot of that's predicated on business operation, marketing, advertising, and what we don't know right now is behind the scenes how many advertisers have said, listen, I can't do it this year. I can't pay what I expected I was going to be able to pay for advertising. So there are so many questions there. I think MLB has done a very admirable job of, I think, first and foremost, being mindful of health and safety, as certainly we saw the NBA, who made the decision first, and then other leagues following suit. I think there's been, and I think Tony Clark's done a very good job as well in his constituency of being strong. By all accounts, it's a very unified union right now, which appears to be the case. So I think both sides of this have done a very good job of, I think, protecting their own interests, and now it's a matter of finding that middle ground. Because, guys, I got to tell you, and you know this because you talk about all the sports, baseball is going to have to really fight for its place in our international discourses as time goes forward. And if you go away for a year and a half, it's hard to reclaim that spot. It really is. The consumer preferences for sports can evolve and change. And if baseball goes away this year for reasons that are not strictly related to COVID, I really think that the loss of market share, if you will be dramatic and will be long-term and very problematic for the game's growth.
Listen, John Paul Morosi is joining us here on Tim and Sid, and John Paul is a sports fan, and we like talking to him because he's a sports fan. And as such, you know that some folks have almost gone as far as to accuse the NBA and NHL of knowing that they might not get their seasons in, or at least the end of their season in, and that they're only doing this for PR. Major League Baseball is talking about traveling. There's so many other parts of the equation that are in Major League Baseball, not the least of which how many games they are going to have to play to eventually get to a champion. Is there a point where you see that they just say, we can't do this and this is over? And when would that point be in your mind?
I think that you could play a 50 to 60 game season if, in fact, that is what baseball is comfortable doing. You could start that in August and finish it by the end of September and then have the playoffs for a month or a month and a half, and then that could be your season. It's not optimal, obviously, but it's that could occur. And if that's the case, you could wait until the early part of July to make an agreement. And then I think basically you have to consider almost you can start to play, in my opinion, a regular season game about a month after your agreement is done, is what I believe. That's about a month long between getting everybody to report, getting ready, three-week spring training, season. It's about a month from agreement to regular season, I believe. And so if you're going to play 60 games, then you could have an agreement in a month from now and then still play. So I think there's still a good amount of runway depending on how flexible you are in the number of games. What you're running out of time now to do is to play that max number of games the players want. Right. And still have a full postseason. So I think there is time to make a deal. I'm confident there will be a deal. I truly believe the NBA and NHL will play as well. I really believe that's going to be the case. It's going to certainly create some different peaks and troughs of our sports calendar over the next year, but that's a minor, at this point in time, that's just scheduling. The primary concern is public health and making sure that we can hopefully avoid the worst of a second spike if and when it comes and just be as safe as we can from a public health standpoint and just make a lot of really good decisions. Again, I'll use the word as citizens first and foremost, and if we do our job well that way, I think the sports will come back and they'll mean a lot, and we will welcome them into our lives, I think, in a real powerful way. But I think that how it's done and the care with which it's done, both from a public health standpoint and just the tone and everything else, I think is going to be really important as we move forward.
JP, you're bang on, and it really doesn't, like, it doesn't matter when they start, as long as everyone's healthy and ready to go. You can get certain numbers of games in, but like, we all agree, they so want that July 4th weekend. Those marketing people are salivating at the symbolism of like, I'm picturing the montage on ESPN and MLB Network of Coldplay's Fix You to Major League Baseball players running out on the field. Like, I just, you know, that is the dream of Rob Manfred. Yeah. It's well, that's kind of what it would be. But but I'm good with whatever. But we all know full well that July 4th weekend is everything. JP, let's talk again. Let's talk when this thing gets locked down. Let's talk when we have spring training dates. Let's talk when we have a regular season schedule out. And it is always, always great to hear your voice. Take care, brother.
And likewise, gentlemen, keep the great conversations going. You keep us all linked up together so well. And just thanks for all the great conversations that you guys always have every single day. So thanks for having me on the show again.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it. There is John Paul Morosi. I'm not lying about the global citizen thing with him. I know he's done interviews in English, Spanish, and Italian. He added the Italian, and if we had more time, I would have had that conversation with him too. The one thing that I need to bring up here is, listen, the second wave thing, when it comes to baseball, is interesting because you're going to be, if you're quarantining NHL and NBA, you can worry about the second wave when it happens. There are states that are already open, and I'm looking at daily cases, and there's no flattening of the curve. Like, some of those states that are open are hitting their new highs in the last couple days. Like, I think Shai Davidi talked about the six stages of grief and when you come to acceptance. I think there's a lot of the United States of America that has just come to the point of acceptance. And I don't know that you can go from state to state to state and be completely safe when those states are wide open and instead of the curve being flattened, there are spikes.
They're the only sport trying it that way until the NFL starts.
Right.
And then they're the only sport that's going to try that. I don't know how MLS is going to do it. And there's a reason the NHL and NBA aren't even trying right now. So I think it's a valid point, Tim. I think it's something to look at. But I got to tell you, Tim, in terms of their news cycle down there, and I know what it is, and I know it's at times a little contrived, but you're not seeing that story anywhere. So people either don't feel they need to put out the real numbers, haven't been putting out the real numbers, or don't feel people care like that.
And some of it has to do
with what. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but some of it has to do with testing and how many tests are being used.
Yeah.
But California, who went lockdown, had their highest number of cases on May 29th.
But with that said, this feels like 8 years ago now, but I think it was last week. A lot of the governors of the biggest states, New York, California, Texas, Florida, mm-hmm. they've all given their blessings here.
Yeah.
So regardless of what the numbers say, they've given their blessings. So it'll be fascinating how baseball specifically navigates this, because I don't know what kind of a world we'll be in testing-wise and COVID-wise once the NFL gets going September 10th. No idea.
Right.
But baseball's the one to watch, and I think it's a good point. It's going to be interesting.
All right, we'll take the break. We'll come back with the good news of the day as we wrap up another edition of Tim and Sid live on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet Television. This is Tim and Sid on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet TV. 360 full 2 hours, Sportsnet, the mains. Is that what we call them? The mains.
That's TV TV lingo. That's a little inside baseball there, McAuliffe. The mains.
East, Ontario, West, and Pacific for the hour. And you can podcast at any time. Time now for the good news of the day. And Sid Zaccaro mentioned that he's got a little sliver for the good news of the day. So I'll allow you to bat leadoff on the good news of the day.
Thank you very much, Tim. I think I overhyped mm-hmm. it, which is why in the break I asked to go first, because you probably have better news than I. But when the outbreak was starting here, Tim, with COVID, mm-hmm. obviously people know my background is Portuguese. I am very proud of that. And Spain got hit very, very hard. And there were a lot of people in Portugal concerned because mm-hmm. of the proximity and for some obvious reasons. And Spain, as of today, has 287,000 documented cases. Portugal has 32,000. I don't know how they have done it, but they have kept the number relatively low. In fact, it's gotten to the point, Tim, where I can tell you tomorrow the Portuguese league becomes the second soccer league in Europe to return behind mm-hmm. the Bundesliga. Games will resume tomorrow, 10 rounds to go. Porto have a point lead on Benfica. It will be 2 months of great soccer and accusations of crooked refs. Cannot wait for it. And I think that's good news if you're a Sporting fan. I think it's good news. And the Premier League's coming on the 17th. Serie A is shockingly returning on June 20th. And I just wanted to throw that one in because I didn't expect that to happen. I thought Portugal was going to be in some more trouble than that. And they have somehow managed it, and they're playing tomorrow. So
By the way, both you and I call Toronto home, and there's a lot of Portuguese. There's a lot of Portuguese in the city of Toronto and the surrounding areas. Shout out Greece, too. Greece has done an unbelievable job.
Yeah.
At last check, they have 2,937 cases, and a few of the neighbors in the area basically said that they shut it down, told anyone who was from Athens to go back home if they were driving anywhere, like literally put up roadblocks along the roads and said, go back home. But Greece, like, they have less than Djibouti. Like, it's unbelievable what they've been able to do, less than Luxembourg.
Yeah.
So Greece has done a wonderful job with it as well. As we continue on with the good news of the day, Sydney, I start with a story of compassion. And amidst all the chaos and ugliness that was Washington, D.C. last night, a group of protesters were trapped by police on a residential street, and they were being pepper sprayed and arrested for violating the curfew, whether or not you believe that this is their right to go out and protest or not. A resident by the name of Raul Dubé opened up his home to about 60 protesters. He gave them milk to wash out their eyes from pepper spray and had pizza delivered. The pizza guy was blocked by police for about an hour, but eventually got through. Dubé described it as, quote, a covert mission to get pizza. The police remained outside, tried to enter his home several times. They even sprayed pepper spray through the window, but he insisted that the protesters were welcome in his home and kept the police out. Apparently, everyone left safely around 6 a.m.
That's an amazing story. That also reminds me, Tim, milk is good for certain things like pepper spray and complete BS for the ghost pepper chip. Remember when they said drink milk for the ghost pepper chip that we ate with Jerry D? What a load of garbage that was. That didn't help at all. It made
it worse.
In front
of Jerry D. Jerry D didn't eat anything.
No, Jerry D, you're right. Jerry D's a coward. He didn't eat anything. Right. Coward. Right.
We desperately need inspiring stories these days. Here's a great one from right here in Toronto. Chika Oriwa graduated from the University of Toronto Medical School as just the second black woman valedictorian in school history and the first woman valedictorian in 14 years. The daughter of Nigerian immigrants, when she entered medical school 4 years ago, she was the only black student in a class of 259. But the program says it has made progress. And earlier this week, they announced that they had 24 black medical students admitted for the class of 2024, the largest group in Canadian history. So awesome news there out of the University of Toronto.
Some horns.
Feel good
there.
Story.
Some horns or something. That's incredible. Right. That's incredible accomplishment. Well done.
And let's be fair, too. There was plenty of people of color within the program as well. We're talking about black students. A feel-good story from down under, where Australian Wildlife Park welcomed their first baby koala to be born at the park since the bushfires that devastated the country, especially the animal population. Keepers at the park decided to name her Ash and said that she is a sign of hope for the future of Australia's wildlife as they try and rebuild after those devastating bushfires. And we are nearing a monumental number, Sydney, worldwide, 2.95 million people have recovered from COVID-19.
Let's go. Let's go. Great news, Tim. Nice job today. Good to talk to you. Thanks to everyone on the show who was a part of this. Thanks to everyone listening. Thanks to everyone watching. These are unique times. We appreciate you. Let's see what tomorrow brings, kids.
Hey, Dwayne Casey is what tomorrow brings. Want to make sure
looked,
that we...
If I would have looked at my chat on my phone, I would have known that, but I didn't. Thank you to McAuliffe for enlightening me.
There was Dwayne a lot Casey. Of Greek Greek notes, and then Dwayne Casey is going to join us tomorrow.
It got lost. This has been Tim and Sid on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Kids, remember, as we leave you, never forget...
I wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. And wash your hands. Washing your hands, washing your hands, washing your hands.